Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Awakened Voices podcast. Today, Christy and me were talking about the topic of setting boundaries or boundaries in general, and how boundaries are such an innate thing to our human experience, and how in our world, setting boundaries becomes sometimes such an active thing that we need to do, and it comes with so much force and aggression needed to separate and set a boundary and maintain a boundary. Whereas we explored in our conversation also how boundaries are just naturally there, and how we can tap into our body's wisdom in sensing our boundaries, and how it can become actually so easy and intuitive to, in different moments, become aware of what boundaries actually needed and become aware of how somebody might be overcoming or entering your boundaries, and what measures or what responses you can use to engage with those people in a rather loving way, but also in a very determined way in keeping and maintaining this boundary up. Yeah, so we hope that you enjoy this conversation and take what is helpful for you. And yeah, with this, I will let you dive into this conversation. Enjoy. Hey, Christy.
Hello, Eve.
So good to be in this space with you.
Yeah, I think we're both coming out of some intense coaching conversations, doing our own inner work so early on a Monday morning. So it is interesting to be here together and opening this space for our listeners, too.
Yeah, that's right. And especially because I was thinking about bringing the topic of setting boundaries, maintaining boundaries, claiming your space. And I just realized that there's also an aspect of me learning currently where my boundary is in sharing about my processes. Like, when is the right time, to what extent, and also thinking about this being recorded and then shared with a very wide audience and everybody actually able to enter this, listen to it over and over again. And me being really sensitive also about what do I actually want to share? Because from my past, I know many experiences, like I came from a place where I was not sharing at all because I had so much pain inside that I wouldn't find words to express. But then moving in the opposite side of the scale, where I would be oversharing a lot and not really being aware to what extent I can trust that person to be trustworthy with holding so much space for me or giving me this feeling of security. And so right now I'm very much the last few years trying to what extent I want to be sharing from an authentic and helpful way, but also protecting my own boundary of not sharing something that is so vulnerable to me that I don't want to be expressing this with people that I don't actually trust, or not trust to this extent that I do trust my coach or my best friends, for example.
Mm-hmm. So much in what you just said, Eve, and I feel that with you. Yeah, because you said you wanted to bring the topic of boundaries. And I think some of the language we use around boundaries can be misleading. Because even if we say the word setting a boundary, it comes with this idea that I'm having to do something to put a boundary in place. And I think that can also sometimes lead people to believe that boundaries are about setting up a false separation or saying no to people. And one of the things that has been a really deep learning for me in the past couple of years, and I want to give credit to my boundaries coach, Molly Davis, for a lot of this work, is that boundaries aren't actually something that we set. They're something that are inherent. They just are. And so as I hear you talking about how much do I want to share and with whom, that's a very beautiful, organic kind of boundary that just exists. And so it's more like, as opposed to setting a boundary, you're kind of feeling into where is the boundary. And when you feel it, you know it. Almost like if you're a river and there are river banks, if you're made of water and the banks are made of dirt, You know I'm made of water. This is me. And the river bank is there. And that's it. Period. So you're not actually having to do anything or set anything. You're just recognizing, these are my thoughts and feelings. This is someone else's thoughts and feelings. This is me, that's you. All while recognizing this underlying connection that we have. The river and the river bank aren't 100% separate either. They're all part of an ecosystem. And they're not, you know, they're not fighting with each other about who's who. They just are. And I think the natural world is very, it just does it. and a funny thing happened. So there's a cat, my cat Ace, maybe you can see, is sleeping there on the chair. And so Ace trusts me and knows me and loves me. And she likes to come for her, you know, getting scratched under her chin many times a day, and she feels very comfortable sleeping here in the room when I'm talking, and we have a nice relationship. And last night I came into the room in the dark, and I wanted to turn on that lamp on that little table, and so I sat down on the chair to turn on the lamp, and there was poor Ace getting sat on. And so that was her body on her chair, sleeping away. And that boundary just exists. And so when I came and sat on her, she did what you're supposed to do. She jumped up and went, jumped on the back of the chair, gave me a very mean look, and then ran out of the room because she doesn't like to get sat on. However, I don't sit on her most of the time. And so she didn't like hold a grudge. She didn't take it into the next day looking at me like, you bad person. How dare you? She just came back and sat on her chair, and we're back to the way it is. So I do think with boundaries, there's a big part of it that's just about trusting. Trusting that your body knows. And so many times we've been told that it doesn't know, or the adults in our little kid lives have overridden our boundaries and told us, you need to sit still when our bodies are telling us they need to wiggle, or you need to be quiet when our bodies are telling us you need to yell or cry. And so we've had our boundaries overridden so much that I feel like part of our work as adults is just to become a mammal. Like, if somebody sits on you, you should yell and run away. You don't have to sit there and let people sit on your space. And then when they're being kind, then you can come back. So it's almost like the boundary is fluid based on reality. I don't have to stay away from someone after they've apologized and changed their behavior. I could say, okay, they're honoring their word. They are, and I can actually see reality. And I think that part of my big issue with boundaries was that so often in my childhood, I was told that something was good for me when actually it was bad for me. And so learning to trust, like, no, this body knows. This body can, it takes some work to sit and feel into that. Do I trust my own healing to be able to share this story widely? Or is this a story that's for later? Is there more healing needed for me before I go say it on a podcast? And it's that getting to trust that the body knows and the body can tell you where your boundary is, which to me feels really different from setting a boundary or choosing a boundary. It's just, this is what it feels like. This doesn't feel quite safe yet. What else might be needed? What's coming up in me? And just letting myself know what's the right boundary, what is the boundary in this moment.
Wow. I can really feel how my whole body's relaxing just by listening to you, because I'm very much trusting into my body's wisdom, and I find it very important to check in with myself. And as you also described it, it's so much less effort to be seeing boundaries as something that is just there naturally already, and that it's more about like sensing where the boundary is instead of being so aggressive or active about it. I mean, there are circumstances when you need to defend your boundaries in some way, and it might need some form of aggression, not in the means of like cruelty or fighting, but more in the means of I'm determined to, this is my boundary and there is no way you can get over that boundary. But then there are also these scenarios where it's just needed to be very clear and just communicate clearly from, I do sense this boundary, and this is where, how I want to be met. This is how I want to be treated. And also what you touched on in terms of our parents overriding these kind of boundaries. I had the experience this weekend where we were very much talking about taking up your space. And also there was this exercise of us having a mat, and this mat was our space, and there was this invader that was like trying to get into our space and using different techniques and manipulations. So it was not only trying to go in there with like force and with like strength, but also with kind of like trying to be super nice or trying to be screaming or trying to run away and, you know, like cut off the connection. And for me, it became so clear, like, to what potential dangers or manipulations I would react so fast in offering, no, this is, you can come in, this is, the space is open. And one of them being that the person was trying to get in and telling me that I'm so egoistic, that I'm just always thinking about myself and that I never think about anybody else. And whereas defending my space when he was screaming at me and trying to get in with aggression, in that scenario, it was really easy for me to be clear and to be like, this is not happening. Like, this is my boundary. Stay away. This is my space. And I was actually very calm in saying that. And I was feeling very powerful in my energy. But when the person started to be like that sneaky and that manipulative and hitting that sweet spot of me trying all my life to be seen as somebody who's caring and who is open and who is empathetic with other people, it was so hard for me to stay in my center and grounded when I was told that I'm so egoistic. And it reminded me of situations with my parents where it was like, you need to take over the responsibility, you know, like you cannot always think just about yourself. And then so many situations coming up also during my childhood where I felt that I wanted to set this boundary, but it was also like challenged so many times because, yeah, of all the other people I need to be considering. And so it was really interesting for me to experience how these verbal attacks in a certain direction would make it so hard for me to maintain my boundary. Yeah, really interesting.
There's so much there on a personal level and in our world work at scale. Something just was coming to mind. I was thinking about Martin Luther King Jr. and the work of the beloved community and how that nonviolent resistance is so powerful, that really grounded knowing of I am a person and I'm worthy of exactly the same as every other person, and just knowing it. And it's not a violent way of being, but it is a very strong way of being. And so I was thinking of some anti-racial work that I've been part of. And, you know, it's the aggressor it's almost easier. Like if you can put up your fists and have something real to fight against, you know, if it was the classic, powerful, wealthy, you know, member of the social elite who's like stepping on the small guy, then you can see like, oh, that's such a clear case of injustice. And in anti-racism work, a lot of times the worst enemy, in quotes, are the liberal white women. And we're being so kind, we're being so whatever, and we actually have the most powerful voice in the room because of all the tropes that are there about we have to protect the sweet little white woman. And all a white woman needs to do to make things crumble is to start to cry. And then the black woman is supposed to come and comfort you and take care of you and all, and go back into these roles that are really deeply ingrained. And instead of being like, you feel bad about the racism that you're part of, then that's the way you're meant to be feeling. And it's not up to someone from a, you know, an oppressed race to come and comfort me. But understanding that level of nuance can be really challenging, and it can be really confusing. And I feel like for me in my childhood, it was very confusing too, when wrong was said to be right and right was said to be wrong. And so I was involved in a very high demand religious family where you were meant to sacrifice, you were meant to be in poverty, you were meant to give to others. But it was very coercive. And so there's not a thing wrong with being generous, taking care of other people, all the good things. as long as yourself is taken into consideration and that your body and your space and your needs for food and everything else are also considered. Because as adults, it's our job, our primary job is to take care of the self. We've only been given one body for this lifetime. And we are meant to be the ruler over this body, what comes in and out, what's allowed to be, you know, near it, inside it. And when we abdicate that responsibility and give that power to someone else because we're trying to take care of other people, it can get very complicated quickly and codependent and people-pleasing. And so just knowing I've got this body, I've got these thoughts, I've got these emotions, these are my natural boundaries. They're inside of me. They're at that healthy core of me, all of them, anger, fear, shame, guilt, joy, love. Those are mine that I feel. And I'm responsible for how my thoughts and my actions are affecting the world. Period. And that just is. But that's not what we're taught.
No, I think actually this whole boundary topic starts even like with taking responsibility of not overrunning your own boundaries all the time, because what I hear from you sharing and also what I experienced in a slightly different shade is that due to the conditioning of being in service and or taking responsibility for something that is bigger than us or some other person that is probably seen as weaker in some way or is put into a position that is actually disempowering for them. Because if they need somebody to constantly take over the responsibility for them, they're actually seen as a child who is actually in need of their parents taking over the responsibility. And it sometimes even led for me to a point where I would constantly overgo my own capacity of holding space or responsibility. So in the service of taking responsibility for others and trying to fulfill their expectations, as you mentioned, in the people pleasing, I completely lost the sense of where my own boundary is. And so returning to what you just referred to, the body wisdom of taking a moment, sensing into what's true within me, sensing my own boundary, and also being confident enough and trusting that boundary in communicating it. Because I think also what you shared in the beginning of the podcast, that boundaries are not this fixed state, like this is where the boundary is and it will always be there and so it's crystal clear. But there are so many scenarios where it's more, as with balance, like a dynamic movement, can make it really hard to know when you reach a boundary. And it takes a lot of awareness and consciousness and presence in the moment to be noticing, oh, I'm getting close to my boundary here. And I actually need to take care of myself right now. I need to take a step back. And that can be really hard.
Right. It's not like, okay, I'm sober, so I can never drink. I won't ever take a drink. It's a lot more, you know, it's like, okay, I need to eat food every day, but there's a lot of choices. What does my body need now? Did I get enough magnesium in my system? Do I have enough hydration? And do I need rest today? It kind of reminds me of that. Have you seen that funny video about consent where it's showing people drinking tea? Like,
no, I haven't. I would love to see that if you want to share that afterwards.
I have to find it somewhere. There's this little YouTube, maybe 3 or 4 minutes long, about where it's talking about sexual consent and relating that to drinking tea. And so if somebody's passed out on the floor, do not pour tea into their mouth. Like, we know that, right? If if someone says, yeah, I'd like a cup of tea, and then you boil the water, you steep the tea for 5 minutes, you pour in the milk and you bring it to them and they say, actually, I really don't want tea anymore. You don't force them to drink the tea. Like, you're actually allowed to change your mind within a 10-minute period, both about sex and about tea and about anything else. Not that you don't honor your word. If you said something and then you changed your mind, you can maybe tell people that you changed your mind. But you are allowed to notice yourself in each moment and do what's good for you in that moment. It doesn't mean like I drink tea or I don't drink tea. It means sometimes I feel like a hot cup of tea in the morning. Other days in the summer, probably not. And so these boundaries are not these, no, I'm not going to ever. It's this really fluid. And to bring it to our coaching professions, coaching has boundaries. You know, if we have a 50-minute session or a 60-minute session or however many minutes it is, those are the boundaries. That's what we've agreed upon together, is that we're going to have this amount of time in which I'm going to take on a coaching relationship with you, or I'm going to take on the client relationship with you. Then this whole conversation is going to be all about me or all about you or whatever it is. And so then what can happen is sometimes we meet up with people outside of the coaching relationship. And just because I'm your coach during the session does not give me permission to coach you in the grocery store or somewhere else. And that just is. And so it's a lot about consent and permission. And so my boundaries coach, Molly Davis, uses an imagery of the house and yard. And so someone who's allowed to be in their yard with your rose bushes in between and chat with you over the fence between your two yards, that's a different level of consent than come on through the front gate, up the garden path, through my front porch, through the door, into the living room, down the hall, and into the bedroom. You didn't give consent for all of those stages. And so knowing, like, how many people do I let in my bedroom is very, very few. And at very specific times and in specific circumstances, does that mean that I don't love someone if I don't take them into the proverbial bedroom of, you know, maybe that represents my thoughts and feelings that I may or may not want to share with someone. And so it's just recognizing, like, where in the house and yard are we, and what consent did I give you? If I know that you're the kind of person that breaks furniture, I'm probably not even going to ask you onto the front porch because I've got a nice porch swing out there. If I think, yeah, you know, this person is safe to sit on the front porch, but I want to make sure that I can stand up and leave, I might not invite them into the living room. And so it's who, it's what, it's when. And these boundaries just are. And we can notice them.
I really love this metaphor. It has so much richness in it. And yet I also wanted to say something to the metaphor that you shared before with the tea, because I had one thought coming up, which was, even though also you accept that, or you say that you want a tea, and then might be that the person is bringing you, for example, a tea with regular milk, but you're actually vegan, and just saying, like, there's also space for readjustments. So, like, just because you said yes to something doesn't mean that you then have to accept it in exactly the way that it's offered to you, but you can even after readjust and say, I still want the tea, but I would like to have it either without milk or with some alternative, plant alternative. And also what you touched on with the permission or consensus reminded me of my coaching session that I was having earlier, where we touched upon setting agreements and not setting agreements only in coaching sessions, where it's actually very clear that at the beginning we agree on what we want the session outcome to be, what the topic should be like, and we give a lot of space for our clients to express. But also to use this form of agreement in all other parts of our life. Even if we're, for example, my coach brought up the example of setting an agreement, going with a friend on a hike, and, you know, like really being clear on, okay, this is the part that I'm going to carry. This is how we're going to take care of one another. This is how we're not running away because one person feels exhausted and the other, like, you know, just like being clear, or if it's more convenient to you that one person is fitter, that they can then go in their own speed and you separate, then that's another kind of agreement and that's perfectly fine. But just like being really clear with the person on what's our common ground, what do we want to agree on, was really interesting for me also to be putting this in everyday situations, like meeting with friends or, you know, going on vacation together with your family. There are so many circumstances in which setting an agreement up front can just help to create so much more clarity and less conflict in the evolution of the experience happening.
Absolutely. That reminds me of a friendship that's very dear to me. And it's a friend who has been a counselor for decades. And she and I used to meet up at Java House in Nairobi about once a month. And so we would text each other the night before, like, hey, we're meeting tomorrow. Do you need any counseling or any coaching? Or is this a friendship conversation? And we just give each other a little heads up of, you know, and most of the time our conversations were just hilarious and joking around and laughing and stuff. But sometimes the night before we'd be like, no, I'm going through a real grief right now, or this thing came up. I'd love to take a few minutes of our time to talk through it. And either one of us could say that. And it just was a really kind agreement that we had. And then we ended up having a bit of a relationship rupture because we didn't do that agreement. So the two of us had gone and we'd spent a whole week together in Italy going to, and it was gorgeous. She loves to think and plan ahead. And she got us tickets to go see the Statue of David at 8 a.m. And I hate planning. And so I was like, okay, you can plan one thing a day as long as the rest of the time we can wander around and happen to eat whatever ravioli smells the best, you know, as we're walking along. So we had this really nice agreement. It was beautiful. And then later I went to see her in Nairobi and we didn't set an agreement. And so I was staying next door to her, but there were like 50 former clients who wanted to see me, and I didn't have a phone that worked, and Uber was on strike that week, and we just didn't have ways to communicate. And in her mind, she thought I was coming mainly to see her for the week. And in my mind, I was like, I'll be lucky if I get an hour with her, with, you know, going back into my vibrant mix of relationships. And so by the end of the week, we had kind of gotten farther and farther apart. Just because we didn't know what the expectations were. You know, she was like, oh, I thought we were going to have another Florence together. And I was like, how could we have Florence in Nairobi? And it takes time to recover from relationship ruptures like that, when you realize, oh, there were these stealth expectations that weren't verbalized. And I think there's, you know, that's maybe a kind of an extreme example of the where, you know, Florence and Nairobi are two different cities. But I think with coaching, it can be important too. I've been a client before with you know, a coach who I've just, of course, with your coach, you're pouring out your soul to them and they're seeing the tears and the anger and a lot of stuff that even some of your closest loved ones don't maybe see in that depth. And I had a coach who had given me about 6 sessions, and then we were in a different environment. And just over the lunch table, with only a few minutes, she said something about, oh, you've got a scarcity mindset. And I didn't give her permission to make comments about her perceptions of my scarcity mindset over lunch. When I wasn't expecting it and when I was needing to prepare to do other things. And so that's also, there's just this when and where it can be very nuanced where the boundaries are, but they are there. They do exist. And one of the examples that my coach Molly explained to me was, you know, if I were to request feedback, and say, hey, you know, hey, Eve, I'd really love it if the two of us could talk about my scarcity mindset. And do you mind if we just talk about how that's showing up for me right now? You have full permission. Then you can ask your questions and all of that. However, that kind of conversation is so personal. It is like being asked into the bedroom. The metaphoric bedroom of the soul. And so, you know, we have a policy at Awaken that we never talk about anyone behind their back. If someone has an issue with someone else, the first thing you do is go to that person. If you do need to talk it out, you can just ask permission. Hey, is it okay if I talk about my feelings and my thoughts about this so that I can go repair with the other person? But we don't engage in triangulation or talking about other people when they're not there. So if I say, hey, would you mind giving me feedback? So let's say that there was, let's say that we're in my bedroom. And I have this beautiful set of, you know, 6 paintings on this gallery wall that I've collected. And I really love how they look above my bed. And you and I are in there talking. And I say to you, hey, Eve, what do you think about these paintings above my bed? Do you think that, you know, do you think that this blue and that green look good together? Should I swap the order of these? Then you have permission to give your opinion about the paintings in my bedroom. But if you and I were in the living room and you were like, hey, I got to go to the bathroom real quick. And then you happened to stop by my bedroom and you went, oh, by the way, you should really change out those pictures. That blue and that green. I don't know why you would pick that. They really clash. We both know that that's a boundary getting crossed. I didn't ask you into the bedroom. I didn't ask your opinion about it. And so you really don't have any business talking about my decor in that room unless I asked for it. And I think that a lot of times, at least in the world I grew up in, people were allowed to say, you must believe this, you must do that, you must feel this way. And it really is like going into your bedroom and stating their opinions about what kind of sheets and blankets you should have on your bed. It's not theirs and it's not their business. And that just is the boundary. And so once you kind of know that just is the boundary, you're not setting a boundary. It just is a boundary. And so then if somebody does start saying that, you can kind of just be like, fascinating. They're not coming in my bedroom because that's the way they behave. And so it just is.
And it also, what the thought that came up for me while I was listening was also like, just by knowing that this boundary naturally exists helps you to like evaluate their stepping over your boundary in such a different way that you're not like taking on whatever they give you as a feedback so personally and, oh, wow, I have to change now because I'm wrong. But you're actually like, wait a minute, like, actually, I was never giving you permission to that. So how dare you, you know, like you actually get into your strength and you can better defend your boundary also in that sense. And I was also thinking that next to a person actively giving permission, there's also always space to ask a person for permission, to be like, hey, would you be open to receive my feedback on your paintings in your bedroom? Or, and that, or, and on top of that, also that there is different ways of communicating then afterwards. So there's this like nonviolent communication where you're just like referring back to yourself and you're not like just aggressively telling the other person on what's the right thing to do, on what's the right thing to believe, and how it should be done in a better way. But you're actually still honoring and respecting the person and give your feedback or your perspective more with a lot of awareness on that this is your reality and that you're sharing your thoughts and your perspective on this, and that there is no need for the other person to change or adapt in any way, but that they can sense into what really resonates with them and take on what they decide is helpful for them.
Love it. Mm. Love it.
Yeah. I have just one question that also came up for me, which would be like, when, like, how do you react when somebody is crossing your boundary, but in a very manipulative, subtle way, maybe not in such an aggressive, obvious way? Like, when you become aware of it, how do you react? Respond, actually.
Yeah, you know, there's something about love that is really, really powerful. I don't know if this exactly relates, but there was one time that I was with my NLP trainer. Her name is Karen. We were down at the coast of near Watamu in Kenya on the beach. And it is a glorious beach. And there's, you know, you just have these white sands all to yourself. But then there would be these people coming from the local villages and they'd want to sell you a piece of cloth or give you a massage or sell you a, you know, something that they had carved, and they can be pretty persistent about it. You know, they need the money, and you're the white person at the beach who has money. And so they're going to make sure that they get what they need out of you. And it can kind of take over the whole day if you have, you know, people find out you're there and then there's crowds coming. And oh man, I used to just get so annoyed and I would be like, no, no, I'm trying to enjoy sunrise at the beach on this golden sand and you are my problem and I can't stand it. And would you please go away? And the more you ask them to go away, the more they stay. And then my friend Karen came down to the beach when I was just really in a very agitated mood with this, I think there were about five women there selling cloth or something. And she came down to the beach. And so then they started to swarm around her. And, you know, from my perspective, and I just thought, oh man, I hope she can shout no loudly enough to get them to leave. And she took time to give each one of them a hug. And she said, oh, thank you for coming. These are really beautiful cloths. I don't have money today and I wish you every blessing. Can I just bless you as you go on your way? And they went on their way. And I was like, oh, now I feel like a crappy human being. But anyway, there are ways. I wish I had a beautiful example for my own life where I behaved that beautifully. But in any case, there are examples and it is possible to love people and say no. We have a saying in our family, love you, bye-bye. If somebody starts a boundary crossing, we go, love you, bye-bye.
I love that. And I also love the example that you mentioned. And I actually see you in many situations doing exactly that, like loving a person and through loving them, being still very clear on this is my boundary. And I think it's also with it, like what I hear out of it is with not questioning your boundary. It comes back to this. She was so clear in that she's not an anti-social person if she's sending these women away, but she was also really clear that she doesn't want to buy something. But then instead of being aggressive because she needed to defend that boundary because she was afraid probably internally, or there was some, you know, anxiety of not being able to maintain the boundary, she was able to, out of the clarity, go into love and be really clear and stay in this, there's no way you can enter my space because my space is clear and my space is here. And I love you still, and I'm doing this for me, and I'm still in touch and in connection with you at the same time.
Yes. And that, I think, is the clearest definition of boundaries. Boundaries are the distance in any given moment at which I can love you and me at the same time.
I think that's maybe a beautiful point to end our conversation on. How do you feel about it?
I have loved this conversation with you. Even, you know, we came in feeling tired and a little bit overwhelmed with all the intensity going on. And what a lovely time to spend with you, reminding ourselves of who we are and that our boundaries are beautiful and real and exist and don't require a whole lot of yelling and shouting most of the time. They just are, and we can live them with love.
Yeah, thank you for this peaceful and insightful conversation. It really helped me to also gain a lot more clarity around my innate capacity and ability to sense my boundaries, and just knowing and trusting that they are there and that I can sense them in every moment, and that I also through tapping into my body can become really clear on where my boundary is. I don't need to find it somewhere in my head. I don't need to find arguments somewhere in my head to defend it, but it's just there naturally. And this just creates such a deep exhale and relaxation in my whole system. So yeah, thank you a lot.
Thank you too.